May all beings be happy. May all beings be healthy. May all beings be free from harm. May all beings love life. May all beings awaken. Welcome to another Cuke Audio Podcast. I'm DC, Poobah of Cuke Audio and Cuke Archives, preserving the legacy of Shunyu Suzuki and those whose paths crossed his, and anything else that comes to mind. I pray that you and yours are safe and comfortable and free from economic distress and able to get out and do whatever it is you want within the limitations of the universal precept of do as little harm as possible. Today we're going to have a little reading from a work in progress, Tassajara Stories. Yeah, now I'm all clean and ready for it. We went to the beach today, and I thought the tide would be too low to swim, but it was just barely high enough to backstroke. And then I finally got to a place where I could actually swim. I could touch the bottom with my fingers. But that worked. Anyway, I really liked it. You know, if I walk down there, I like to go in and swim. And then Katrinka walks with their dog way down and comes back. And then she goes in for a little bit. And then we put our clothes back on. And we've had a little bit on to swim and go walking back. And we had to go early, she said, because it was sunny. And then it's rainy season. We thought, you know, it's going to rain. And sure enough, it did rain. She walked faster than us. I had body. And she got home before it rained and brought some laundry in. But Bonnie and I got soaked. Boy, it just started raining really hard all of a sudden. And we were soaked coming in. And then I've got to hose Bonnie off because she's got sand on the bottom of her. But that was sort of fun. Dried her off, which she really likes. Went back in. And then, you know, I took all my wet clothes off and put them out to get Katrinka's going to throw them all in the washer. And usually after I go in the ocean, I take a shower. But there was so much rain coming down. And I was out standing in our little tiny back porch area and naked. And so I just went out in the rain and stood there. And then there's this big giant spout of water coming down from one of the from the roof, you know, like a little waterfall, and I just stood under it, so I didn't have to take a shower. I got that anyway, so I'm all clean. That was hours ago, and I'm gonna get this read and go to bed. So after our pause to meditate, we will have reading of from Tassajara Stories. Doksan. Once a month, there was a one-day sesshin at Sokoji. A lot of zazen and kinhin from early dark to dinner time. When he first came to America, I heard there were 50-minute periods, but now they were just 40-minute periods. During the afternoon, Suzuki would give Dokusan private interviews in the office downstairs. I sat outside with three others. I was trying to follow my breath and let my thoughts and emotions subside as he said we should do in zazen. Quote, first your thinking will calm down and much later your emotional activity. In spite of my efforts, I was thinking about a lot of things. Mainly, what on earth would I ask him? I had been told that I should ask him a question. I had only recently started sitting. Suzuki had just come back from a trip to Japan. We'd seen each other at the end of each service when we bowed together at the door to his office, as everyone did on their way out to get their shoes on and go down the street. I already had a feeling that he knew me. I felt like he was looking right into me every time we bowed. Not as if he was sizing me up, more like he was saying hello to a vast part of me I wasn't in touch with. But I didn't know who he was, except someone who seemed to be awfully accepting and accepted by those of us filing by to bow with him. I'd seen him once in the hall upstairs when I had arrived early, and he smiled and nodded and seemed very nice and small. He hadn't seemed that small when he bowed with me after service. It seemed like he had a different size he wore for different occasions. And now I had to ask him a question. I had not read much about Zen. Before going to Zen Center, people had talked about wax and yelling and fantastic insights, but there didn't seem to be much of that going on. There was sitting and watching the breath and scrubbing the floor. It was all something I could do. I heard him say in a lecture that this practice is enlightenment, not a means to attain it, so you don't have to seek enlightenment, just do the practice. There was a book I just read that made that point, a rare one, on Suzuki's sect, The Soto Approach to Zen by Reiho Masunaga. Finally, it was just me sitting alone in the deserted downstairs hall, in that dank old paint hall with the dusty smell. We'd have to have a lot more work periods to get this whole place clean, I thought. Excuse me, I heard a soft voice and looked up. Suzuki was standing at the door to his office, the brown sleeves to his robe dangling down to his hand with a small, carved, curved, polished stick. He looked so harmless. I thought, surely he doesn't hit people with that. I sat there with my head turned, looking at him. I rang the bell. He said, you should answer by ringing yours. Bell. Oh, I said, and picked up the handbell next to me and hit it. Too loud, he said. And he took a few steps toward me, squatted, picked up the bell, and rang it. What a nice sound it had, a sound that took me away for a second. I got a sonar picture of the whole building. Like that, he said. Not too much. In the office, there were two square, flat black cushions on a gozu mat with a round black zafu on them. And there was a small altar with a Buddha candle and incense. Someone had shown me the forms for Dokusan already, but he went over it again. Bow on the floor to the altar three times and then stand up and bow to him. He stood up and bowed on the floor with me at the same time when I did that. I didn't know that this was not the usual custom, but I'd hear he did it with others at times as well. I positioned myself on the zafu with my legs crossed in half lotus and sat facing him while he folded his legs and adjusted his robes around them. We were quite close. I didn't feel intimidated by him. He had a gentle manner. I sat looking at him for a brief moment, and then he said, "You sit very well." "Thanks, Granny," I thought, remembering my mother's mother often telling me, "Sit up straight." "I like it," I said. "I don't know what it is, but I like it." He looked comfortable, like a soft brown pyramid. "You look like you were born sitting," I said, and looked him in the eye. He immediately averted his. "Do you have some question?" "Uh-oh, too buddy-buddy," I thought. "I don't know. I don't really have a question. I'm pretty new and just seeing what this is all about. I decided to sit for a year here, and then, I don't know." I was looking at his hands. They were stroking his stick. "Is that okay?" "That's pretty good," he said. "Better not to have too many questions." "I could ask a question for my mother," I said, with a rising pitch at the end, indicating I was asking if it was all right to do so. "That's okay. My mother believes in reincarnation. Do you believe in reincarnation?" "Oh, your mother believes in reincarnation? That is very unusual." His voice was quiet, yet firm. It reminded me of Mr. Gardner, a 90-year-old man at the tennis courts where I played as a kid. He'd tell us stories between sets, and I'd get lost in the mesmerizing quality of his voice. Like Mr. Gardner, I wanted to hear Suzuki talk more. "Do you believe in reincarnation?" "Well, I don't really know. I sometimes think so. But it is not something I know for sure. Maybe there is." Good Lord. He didn't seem very sure of it for a Zen master. I thought they believed in these things. "Thank you," I said. "Where does your mother live?" "Ah, great. He wants to talk more. In Texas." "Oh," he said, as if he were very impressed. "Texas. It's very big." "Not as big as Alaska," I said. "But if you melt all the ice in Alaska, then maybe Texas is still bigger." This is something I'd hear in Texas now and then after Alaska became a state and we were no longer the biggest. "What does your mother think of your being here at Zen Center?" "She likes it. She says she figured I'd do something like this. But she wants me to move out of the Fillmore to near here where it's safer." "Yes, you should be near here, and you should be near older students. They can give you some guidance. Your life shouldn't be all topsy-turvy." He said this, waving his stick back and forth in short arcs. "Just keep sitting here, and we will get to know each other. Okay?" "Okay." And then he reached down and picked up his bell and rang it, and I got up and bowed down to the floor with him again. I went back to Zazen, which entailed thinking about that Doksan. Mind wandered over to thinking about moving closer to Sokoji. I liked living immediately next door to the Fillmore Auditorium for $75 a month, where I could hear the new bands blasting out from over there while drifting off to sleep. But I didn't like getting knocked down on the sidewalk by three mean young guys at 4:45 in the dark morning on my way to Zazen. I'd flipped my wallet up to one of them fast. He saw it was empty, threw it back at me, and kicked me in the head, which hurt for a couple of days. It didn't stop me from getting up the next morning and taking the same route. The teeth gritting of the last 5 minutes of the Zazen period got my mind off this review of recent events. At least the period wasn't 50 minutes long. Thanos. So this is a quote. I was 40. How old? But it was a whole universe of 20-year-olds. There were just a few older women at Tassajara early on. Older as in one other in her 40s with one in her 50s. Catherine Thanos studied at the San Francisco Art Institute. Classmate Mary Qualiata brought her to Sokoji the first time. She was embarrassed and discouraged because she couldn't sit a whole period without moving, and that seemed frowned upon. The third time she came, Suzuki was doing a round of the room with his stick and stopped behind her. She knew he was there, was apprehensive. He reached down and touched her shoulder, stayed there a brief moment, then moved on. She felt energized, spirits lifted. I was on the ceiling the rest of the period. Still, Catherine had a shy nature and was still a little afraid of Suzuki. She didn't try to fraternize with him, but just the opposite happened. At Tassajara, he chose her to be his anja, cabin cleaner, after Louise, who showed her what the job entailed. Her first day, she entered nervously, not sure what to do. Everything was already so tidy. She saw a small piece of cake on the altar by the Buddha statue and asked what she should do with that. He told her to leave it there and put her to work in the garden. After an hour, he invited her in, served her tea. She noted how he poured the hot water into the cups first and then into the teapot, swished it around, and poured it back out before using it to make the tea. He was showing her how to make tea for him and his guests, and then he served her the piece of cake. She felt as if maybe he'd thought she was asking for it. Catherine's cabin was next to Suzuki's. One day she was sick. He came over with a pot of tea. That made her feel better. She hoped he'd come again, but he didn't. At Tassajara and in the city, there were couples who'd arrived together and some which formed there. After Tassajara, Catherine moved into the new city center. She and Bill Smith became close. As long as two people interested in each other didn't make too many waves, no one paid much attention. But if they wanted to live together, they had to get permission, which didn't seem to be that hard to get. She asked Yvonne, who sent her to Katagiri, who didn't want to deal with it, and sent her to Suzuki. Catherine remembers. We had to make a formal appointment. Suzuki Roshi was very upset. There was this person, Bill, who was divorced and had just had a very intense relationship with Marion Derby, and now he wanted to take on another relationship. Basically, he said no. He drew a diagram of a vessel with holes in it, and he said, if there are holes in it, that the water spills out. I thought he meant we should be Dharma friends first, and having a sexual relationship would dilute that. I was hurt and angry, but still, Suzuki Roshi was my father, symbolically, and I was committed to being there with him. The next time I saw him in the hall, he came up and smiled and bowed to me, and I had a hard time because I was pissed off. Bill had been already moving in, and he had to stop and move out. Before long, Catherine realized it was all for the best. I wanted to have a relationship and try that out, and the man happened to be Bill. At the first Shosan at Tassajara, Catherine presented herself before Suzuki and said, "Inside there's a yes and a no." Suzuki answered, "Follow the yes." She said, "Thank you very much," which was the standard thing to say before returning to one's seat. She kept thinking about his answer. "That was a powerful turning point for me," she said, "because he pushed me to figure out what yes would mean to me, and that was complete commitment." Bulgaria. Mike Daft was the head cook for the day. He'd come in before morning zazen to get started with the bread for lunch, enough for 8 loaves, whole wheat, with some rice flour. It was practice period, so there was oryoki lunch in the zindo. We cut some steaming slices straight out of the wolf oven. "Awful! Yuck! What's that?" "Oh," he realized, he'd put in cups of salt instead of tablespoons. There was a zazen period at 11 that was just ending. The brief noon service would start in a minute. It was time to serve up and be ready to hit the lunch on and bring the serving pots and baskets out to the back table as black and gray-robed students took their seats, sat on their zafu in the zindo to chant and receive lunch served by other robed students. Mike wondered if he should announce that lunch would be served without that course. But there were 3 bowls to fill. It seemed it had to be served. I was on the lunch crew that day and had a suggestion, Mike thought, then nodded. In the silence of the zindo, after the first part of the meal chant, but before the servers walked down the aisles, Mike bravely announced, "Today's lunch features Bulgarian salt loaf." Extra Hain cold-pressed margarine and unsalted sesame butter were served as condiments. Later, there were no complaints. Bulgarian salt loaf was, however, never served again. Okay, well, there's 3 more little pieces for the pile to as candidates for Tassajara stories. They are Tassajara stories. the first one took place entirely at Sokoji, but it's, you know, background on what got me there. Listen, I apologize for the quality of the recording. And like right now, I'm just doing it with my earplugs. They're pretty nice earplugs Katrinka gave me for Christmas. But, you know, I need to get back to my nice Blue Yeti mic upstairs with its pop filter. This thing is much too poppy clicky. There's weird stretching noises. No, we're not stretching. There's weird swishing noises and things that are added. I'm just lazy. I'm sitting down here on the couch and I think, I won't go upstairs. All I have to do is walk upstairs and go in the guest room. But it's a little awkward. I have to get on the bed, swing the mic over and get on the bed and get situated and plug things in. And I'm just sitting right here and I think, well, it'll be all right to do this. But it's not really. So my apologies. And next time I'll traipse all the way upstairs. I didn't put this apology up front, though, because then you would have noticed it. You might not have thought about it or noticed it, but I did. Okay, so until next time, this is DC. Poobah of Cuke Audio and Cuke Archives, coming to you from Sleepy Sonor with Doggett Bandita, Feline Cuchita, and dear lovely Katrinka, who's sound asleep over there in the bedroom with Bondi, while Cuchita is sleeping two houses down in Wayan's front area. It's all under a roof there, and she likes it in there. It's sort of like he uses it as his living room. It's got a roof over it. It's got walls, but it's also open on one side. It's sort of like the front of the place. I don't know. It's unusual. Anyway, she hangs out over there. So look, anyway, we're all wishing you and yours and all of us a grand awakening. Ooh.